Paranormal Radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
This, of course, is the Paracast with Gene Steinberg and Chris O'Brien. Now, on our recent episode with Dr. Richard Sauter, we had a buzzy, buzzy episode. We have recently then had this episode, Dr. Richard Sauter, talking about underground alien bases, about a certain drug he had taken, and about the voices he heard. Now, I know Chris stands by a lot of what he said and about his research, and I'll respect that. But one particular problem we had with that interview is the fact that we have this constant chronic buzzing. We joked about it. You know, maybe ET's there, maybe there's some unaccounted for interference.
We tried to joke about it, Gene. We tried. My humor fell a little flat with the good doctor.
Yes, he doesn't appreciate.
Well, it was 3:34 in the morning.
At that time, we're both getting punch drunk or something, not from any liquid refreshment, but because of the late hour.
Yeah.
So he got upset over it, but we probably have the solution. It's nothing paranormal, okay? Nope. It is a cell phone placed too close to his computer, an old-fashioned cell phone, sending out too much RF. Nope. And if we knew that during the interview, I would have said, throw out your cell phone, let's get on with this.
Just think what that cell phone does close to your brain.
Right. Think about that noise that you heard on this episode, okay? Think about the noise, ladies and gentlemen. Now consider the impact to your brain of all that radiation. Think of the impact to his brain, all that radiation. Forget about all the other stuff that's going on.
Right. The ayahuasca doesn't help either, but... Well, I guess in his case it might. And in terms of me standing by his research, as you kind of tactfully put it, I really respect Richard Sauter for a number of reasons, the foremost being that he really has done a yeoman's job researching the whole underground and underwater base scenario. I haven't talked with Richard in a number of years, and I do realize that he's gone through a lot by his activist work in protesting, getting arrested, you know, climbing the fence at the missile base and the other activities that he's political activities that he's been involved with. And, you know, I do sense that he's been kind of on edge lately. And it was I don't think we really found him in his best top form at 3 in the morning. And I don't want people on the forums to throw out a number of years of very good work that he did in the 90s about the underground and underwater base scenario. Just because a person, you catch them on a bad day, that you can't throw out all their hard work. And I just wanted to underscore that.
Well, this is the problem I have with it. Let's not look at the research in the book, but coming in here and saying he heard these voices transmitted to him. Now, maybe he's right. Maybe that's done. Obviously, it's scientifically possible. But it kind of makes your eyes roll a little bit when you hear it the first time. Oh, this guy says to me that this is such and though and all that stuff. This guy said this to me while I was home in bed. And you got to think, you know, that's kind of weird, isn't it?
It is weird, but it is what it is. And, you know, I do, you know, like I said, I've known Richard for quite a number of years, and the story always did kind of seem a little strange to me for obvious reasons. But again, I think it was some form of validation in his own mind, whether projected there or otherwise, that the work that he was beginning to undergo in terms of researching the whole subject, I think it gave him validation that he was doing something that needed to be done. And I think his book, Underground Bases and Tunnels, you know, What is the Government Trying to Hide, I think is the preeminent work on the subject. And I don't care who you are, if you have any interest in the subject, that is really the go-to book. And that's end of report. You know, I really don't care what anybody else thinks about the man. All I know is that he is a crack researcher, and nobody has done the amount of work in that subject that he has, and I really admire him for that. All the other stuff is like, you know, a quirky guy. I guess as he's getting older, he's getting quirkier. So, you know.
Well, then
no,
I'm in real trouble because yeah. I am just quirks. But then Jim Moseley is older than I am.
And you're, of course, quirky.
Oh, Jim has been quirky forever. every day I've known him. I've known Jim for many, many years. He's always been quirky. Quirky and fascinating, but quirky.
Yep. Comes with the territory. Some people do get driven over the edge, as we both well know. And I just hope that I wish Richard the best of luck down in the Ecuadorian wilds of the Ecuadorian jungles down there. And I hope that he does find what he's looking for. But at the same time, I really do think people need to look at the man's body of work before they just throw that that body of work out with the bathwater.
And also, look, you've got people who do stand by him like you do, like Richard Dolan and everything else. Just remind him, keep the cell phone away from your head or get a different cell phone that emits less radiation. And when you do shows with Skype, keep the cell phone away.
Yeah, maybe water down that ayahuasca a little bit too, bud.
I have no problem with that for trying to seek higher intelligences and all this other stuff. Let me ask you the question, which will be obvious here. I'm going to put you on the spot. Have you taken it?
Ayahuasca? No, I haven't.
Okay. Have you watched people who have taken it and seeing what they undergo?
No, I've never been around an ayahuasca ceremony. I have dabbled with the active ingredient, which is dimethyltryptamine, and in its most potent form, which was gathered from Bufo valerius, which is a psychedelic frog that actually lives down around you, Gene. It's the largest frog in North America. You can milk them, and it produces a very pure form of DMT, which is the active ingredient in ayahuasca. I don't care what Dr. Souter says. He obviously hasn't done his homework on that.
Okay, so you can accept his underground research that maybe his knowledge of drugs and their impact and sources is a bit wanting.
Well, yeah. I think if anybody claims that DMT is not the active ingredient in ayahuasca, obviously ayahuasca is a combination of plants, one which allows the body to absorb the dimethyltryptamine into the system. It's an MAO inhibitor, but he definitely needs to do a little research on that, because I have done some research on the subject, and DMT is a very powerful shamanic substance. It is not for everybody. Some people could be pushed over the edge with it, and it should not be done, as Richard did mention, as a recreational drug. It is not that at all. It is a sacred, very serious compound that has serious repercussions if you don't address the scenario correctly.
It's not for college students to hang out in their dorms and consume this stuff.
No. Okay. No, it's not. No drugs are.
Today we have a person who's coming on our show who, by the way, is a professional skeptic.
Yeah, this will be fun.
Right. It's Benjamin Radford. Benjamin Radford is the managing editor of the Skeptical Inquirer magazine, okay? All right, he's part of PsyCop, so he's one of the people that sometimes we regard them as the enemy. And he has a book out here called Tracking the Chupacabra, The Vampire Beast in Fact, Fiction, and Folklore. So it's a fascinating little book. It's less than 200 pages, which compared to, say, a Harry Potter book is pretty small.
Yeah.
And the paragraphs are spread out a little bit. So it's not a big book, lots of illustrations. You can go through it in just a few hours. But he makes a lot of interesting points. And whether or not, folks, you are willing to accept that we're having a dyed-in-the-wool skeptic here, there are lots of things that you have to listen to on both sides of the equation when it comes to the paranormal. You don't just assume you read anything from believers, but if they're skeptics about something, ignore them, because the only way you find the truth is by looking at all sides of the equation.
Agreed.
That was simple.
Very simple. In fact, a lot of what he says in the book, I wholeheartedly agree, and I can't wait to talk about it in more depth.
Benjamin Radford joining us next on the PowerCast. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. That means you're in
the PowerCast.
Yeah. Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources, April 15, 2011. Gold opened this morning at $1,477.60. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,515.31, $757.66 for a half ounce, or $378.83 for a quarter ounce. That's $1,515.31, $757.66, and $378.83.
The Constitution and the Bill of Rights have been reduced to old relics politicians ignore, trample with their outlandish, overreaching policies. Your support of the Campaign for Liberty stands in the way of this insidious process. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I've teamed up with the Campaign for Liberty to offer the authentic proof quarter-ounce pure gold coin. For only $390 plus shipping, Midas will donate $100 to this incredible organization. Help fight big government by ordering your gold coin at 800-686-2237. You get to win twice by owning gold and fighting an overreaching government. Call 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
This is an urgent message. Urgent if you care about feeding your family. S-510 has passed through Congress and will make the sale of heirloom seeds difficult. Prices of non-GMO seeds are skyrocketing and may be hard to afford in the future, if you can even find them. As the economy continues to decline, this will make the heirloom seeds worth their weight in gold and one of the best barter tools available. When food supplies eventually run out, your solution is to grow your own food and barter tool. Now, for a short time, GetSeeds.net offers 100 packets of heirloom non-GMO vegetable seeds for only $59. Pay with 2 ounces of pure silver or just $59. The best price on the net for high-quality seeds. Our GetSeeds.net seeds are open pollinated vegetable seeds sealed in a Mylar bag for long-term storage. Bulk pricing available, so get seeds while you still can at GetSeeds.net or call toll-free 877-341-4769. That's 877-341-4769.
This special announcement is brought to you by Renaissance Charge.
Have you ever wondered if you could make your car run on 100% electric power for free? It is now possible. How about a simple device that is both a super efficient motor and a free energy generator at the same time? What if this could also be used to restore useless batteries and save you lots of money? Because our customers asked for it, we have organized a Renaissance Charge Conference workshop on July 29th to July 31st at the beautiful Coeur d'Alene Resort in Idaho. Not only will you see these fascinating energizers, but you will be able to build some alongside genius inventor John Bedini. Participate in this truly historic event featuring our cutting-edge alternative energy, Tesla technology. Register early for the best seats and advanced workshop by visiting rcharge.com. That's r-charge.com for details. Or call 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
Joining us on the Paracast with Gene Steinberg and Chris O'Brien is Benjamin Radford. The book is called Tracking the Chupacabra, subtitled The Vampire Beast in Fact, Fiction, and Folklore. Now, those of you who are obviously interested, very heavily interested in the paranormal, might look askance at having a skeptic amongst our team, because Ben, as we know, you're the editor of the Skeptical Inquirer magazine, right?
Actually, deputy editor, but yes, I've been involved with them for 12 years now.
Okay. What got you into so-called skeptical movement to explore all these subjects?
Well, you know, I grew up having a fascination with all sorts of mysteries and the unexplained, the paranormal. So when I was a teenager, I went and got books on, you know, UFOs and Bermuda Triangle and Bigfoot and this and that and the other. And I was fascinated by these things. But I was also kind of disappointed when I read them because there was very little actual investigation. In most cases, when I picked up books or read magazines about these mysterious or paranormal topics, almost invariably, they were just simply repeating stories. And stories are fine, but I wanted to get more of the actual investigation. I wanted to know, well, you know, who interviewed this eyewitness? Who verified that this particular fact is true? So I kind of got dissatisfied in my teens and early 20s with the lack of real, serious, legitimate investigation in paranormal topics. And so one of the things that I wanted to do after I got my degree and sort of began working with Skeptical Inquirer magazine was to do some investigations. I said to myself, well, if I can't count on other people to do good quality science-based investigations, well, then damn it, I'll do it. And I worked with myself and, of course, Joe Nickel, who's the senior research fellow there, and other people as well. And that's sort of what launched me into doing these investigations and so sort of more broadly applying science and skepticism to all topics, whether it's paranormal or not.
Fast question. Do you believe there's any reality to any paranormal event anywhere, anyhow?
Fast question, with a long answer. You know, if you're going to say, is it paranormal? I mean, paranormal by definition, depending what definition you're using, is beyond the normal. So, I would have to say, do I believe that there are supernatural things? I believe that there might be, but, I think you need to use science and evidence to find them if they're indeed out there.
When it comes to UFOs, we have all this supposed evidence out there. How do we basically end the controversy there? How do we actually find out what's really going on? Because we can say, well, this isn't real for whatever reason, but then we have the photographs and the radar cases
Sure.
and all that. How do we actually get a real investigation going without any preconceptions, which is so important?
Well, I think there's a couple things. In some ways, it's similar to the situation when you're looking for evidence for Bigfoot. You know, you have eyewitness sightings, you have reports, you have some fuzzy photos, you have this and that. And you also have reports by credible eyewitnesses, you know, people who are not stupid, they're not crazy, they're sincere, believable people, and they're reporting things. And the problem is, you know, how do you get beyond this baseline of evidence that hasn't gotten anybody anywhere so far? And ultimately, you know, if these things exist, then there should be hard evidence for them. If whether ghosts exist or Bigfoot exists or extraterrestrial craft exist or chupacabras exist for that matter, this shouldn't be a matter of just supposition and eyewitness accounts. There should be hard evidence somewhere. And so we would need hard evidence. We would need some sort of something you can test forensically and get that.
Okay, well, if someone sees a ghost, okay, you have a visual report. I saw something, mm-hmm. and, you know, it looks like my dead grandmother or something. Doesn't matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
How, then, can you go about proving what someone can only attest to visually? I mean, you'll take that testimony if they say, well, John Smith came into the grocery store and shot the cashier and killed the cashier. John Smith, I identify him in a lineup. He gets convicted of murder. I saw a ghost, okay? An apparition disappeared in front of my eyes. You don't believe that, but you believe the testimony in a murder case.
No, I didn't say I don't believe that at all. In fact, I take eyewitness accounts very seriously, and I interview eyewitnesses all the time who tell me about different things that they've seen. So to my mind, the issue is not do you discount eyewitness testimony, because, of course, you shouldn't and you can't. But what you do is you use that not as evidence in and of itself, but as a step towards evidence. So, for example, if someone says they saw a ghost, first of all, I'd ask them, how do they know specifically it was a ghost? I mean, what characteristics led them to conclude that it was a ghost? I'm not saying it was or wasn't, but that's not an irrelevant question. But then the question would become, well, what else might it have been? What if, for example, the person saw something out of the corner of their eye in a store or somewhere else, and there was a video camera, and the video camera showed nothing at all? If the video camera doesn't show anything, that doesn't disprove the person's experience, but it does provide a second avenue of investigation. So I wouldn't discount any eyewitness's experience, but it's important to realize that eyewitnesses can be and often are wrong. You know, you can use the example of police lineups. Well, there are literally dozens and hundreds of cases of people who have been convicted and sent to prison, sometimes on death row, based on faulty eyewitness testimony. And they've been cleared through DNA analysis.
Okay,
and
you always have that other kind of evidence. We have the DNA. Sure. We might have other witnesses. We might have an alibi that you can check to see, well, this person couldn't have been at the grocery store when you think he was. He had to be somewhere else. This is the proof. So hopefully you get that person acquitted, get that person off. In the case of a ghost, you can't touch it, I don't think.
Well, actually, as you probably know, there are people that disagree with you. I've talked to people who said they've felt ghosts. If your belief is that ghosts
presence,
are tangible,
but you don't basically go up to the ghost and shake their hand, you will feel a presence. Something is here, and now I see it, and now it's gone. So I felt it, I saw it, but I can't touch it. I can't get fingerprint.
What distinction are you making between feeling it and touching it?
Feeling in the sense of I sense a presence, okay? I sense something is weird. Something's happening. I see the ghost, and maybe the ghost says something or not. I don't know. Okay, so how do I go about proving that? That's the rub. That's the problem. How do I prove what I saw is what I saw?
Well, right. There's a couple things. First of all, you know, as you know, the issue comes down a lot of time to psychology because people can sense things that don't exist. One example that I give is a friend of mine told me I'd known him for several years and I noticed that he never came to visit my house. I didn't know if it was, you know, because I had BO or he didn't like me or whatever else. And he finally told me that the reason he never came to visit me was because I live across a river and he had panic attacks about crossing a bridge. And in this case, I mean, it was very real. He had panic attacks. He had sweating. He could feel the pressure on him. But it was in his head. It had nothing to do with external reality. So, you know, just because someone senses something, it doesn't necessarily correspond with anything real.
And that's what I said. That's the whole point.
Right.
The point being, how do you quantify the reality? And that's, of course, the dilemma we try to explore in the paranormal is how to take all these experiences that people have had and see if we can make some sense, or maybe we can't make sense of them. Maybe they are almost like, you know, religious miracles that things happen, but we really can't prove it except for the eyewitness testimony. And there you go. We have Benjamin Radford. The book is Tracking the Chupacabra, which is what we're going to get into next. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, neighbors. Meetings are an essential part of any business. You know, making presentations to clients, collaborating with your colleagues. Well, make them as simple as possible to run and organize. Use GoToMeeting by Citrix, the easiest, most reliable online meeting service. With GoToMeeting, you can schedule an online meeting in seconds. Attendees can join with just a click from anywhere. Meeting materials are viewed on everyone's screen, making collaboration seamless. GoToMeeting is so easy to use for you and everyone joining your meeting. Plus, with GoToMeeting, hold as many meetings as you can for one flat rate. To have phone conferencing and voice over IP are included. You know, my listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, a month of unlimited online meetings free. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code PODCAST.
Here we go. The Spring Break $99 deal from Life Change Tea. Hit it, boys.
If you want it, here it is. Come and get it. But you better hurry, cause it's going fast.
That's right. 2 months of Super Tea and a 45-day supply of fat burners for just $99. Spring into hell for just $99. Feel good. Clean your body.
Lose weight.
It works immediately, so call now. 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. Or you can purchase online at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And remember,
Sonny, if you want it, here it is. Come and get it. But you better hurry, cause it's going fast.
That's GetTheTea.com.
The U.S. economy is at a tipping point. 40 cents of every dollar the government spends is borrowed. The president of the Federal Reserve in Dallas was recently quoted saying, "This path will lead to insolvency, resulting in the collapse of our government and our economy. Our country can't function like this, and neither can your household. That's why you need to prepare, and priority one is your food supply. Fortunately, it's easy and affordable with the help of Ready Reserve Foods. Ready Reserve Foods has been a premier supplier of long-term storable foods for 37 years. Their unique process assures the highest quality long-term food storage available. With a 25-year shelf life, a full year supply of quality food for two people costs a fraction of what you pay at the grocery store. For a free, full-color catalog, call 800-453-2202. That's 800-453-2202. Or visit ReadyReserveFoods.com. Ready Reserve Foods, making preparedness simple since 1972.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
Benjamin Radford, the guest. The book is Tracking the Chupacabra. Our co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. So now we move to the book. What, for those who haven't explored the subject, is a chupacabra?
My latest book, yes, the Chupacabra. Well, the Chupacabra, it's the world's third best-known monster after Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster. And it's probably the world's second best-known vampire after Dracula. It's said to suck blood out of its prey. It's a vampire. And Chupacabra means goat sucker in Spanish because goats are supposed to be its favorite prey, even though it's been said to kill and take blood out of domestic pets and cattle and pigs and livestock and other things. It originally came from Puerto Rico in Latin America in 1995. It was first sighted then. And since that time, it's appeared in several different forms around the world, primarily in North and South America. But it's now known worldwide. I mean, it's essentially a global phenomenon.
Let's look through the history. How far back can you go in doing this kind of research?
Well, that's a great question because when I began my research, and I should just point out that I've been investigating these sorts of cryptids and cryptozoological things for many years now. I co-wrote a book called Lake Monster Mysteries in 2007 that dealt with lake monsters, and I've also done stuff on Mothman and Chupacabra and Bigfoot and other things as well. So I already had sort of a pre-existing framework for doing these analyses. And when I looked into it, I had always sort of assumed that the Chupacabra had been around for decades. If you look at the lore of Bigfoot, for example, or the Loch Ness Monster, those claim to go back, in some cases, centuries, if you believe Native American stories and tales. But in the case of the Chupacabra, what I found is that it really only dates back to 1995. It's a very, very new creature. It's only been around for 15 or 16 years. So that was one of the things that really intrigued me about the monster was, well, hold on here. I mean, real animals, real biological, zoological creatures don't appear out of nowhere. I mean, it's not like, the leopard suddenly appeared, in 1983 New Jersey. So that was a real puzzling thing was, why weren't there reports of chupacabras in the 50s and 60s and 70s and even earlier, but there just weren't, or at least there weren't any that I've been able to find.
What caused it to happen when it happened? Where did it start?
So you go back to the original chupacabra, which began in August of 1995 in Puerto Rico, in the suburb of Canovanas, outside of the capital of San Juan. And a woman named Madeline Tolentino was the first person to see the chupacabra. And she gave a very, very detailed description of what she saw. And she said it was 3 to 5 feet tall, and it was bipedal, had a row of distinctive spikes going down the back. It had long arms and legs, and sort of distinctive red or black wraparound eyes, no nose to speak of, smaller absent ears, things like that. And she just gave this very, very detailed description, which soon became the standard template, classic example of chupacabra that went worldwide. And it was just, basically what happened was that, that her sighting was sort of co-opted by UFO believers in Puerto Rico. There's a very strong, as you probably know, there's a very strong UFO believer presence in Puerto Rico. And, one of the main, people there, a man named Jorge Martin, heard her story and created a drawing based on her depiction. And from there, it just basically went all over the world through the internet. So that was the original type of chupacabra. And that was seen, again, primarily in Puerto Rico in 1995, 1996, 1997. And by 2000, it wasn't seen so much. I mean, there was a sighting here or two, but it had mostly faded away.
Well, it moved to Chile.
Well, that's, in some cases it moved to Chile. There was claims that that you know there was a rash of animal deaths in Chile. Although in my research, people weren't necessarily describing the original chupacabra in those accounts. Primarily, people were saying that something, presumably the chupacabra, had attacked the animals. But because this was done overnight, in the evening nobody had seen it.
Excuse me for interrupting. I mm-hmm. do disagree with you on that. I've done quite a bit of research into the subject, and there were quite a number of reports in April, May, and June of 2000, and some of them described very, very similar. There were very similar descriptions to the Puerto Rico version of this, and we're going to get into the other versions, obviously. And it was described as having a row of spines down its back. There were a number of reports that described leathery type wings. Right. Other reports described it able to leap in a very abnormal way, which also we found in some of the early reports from Puerto Rico. So, I mean, it's not exclusively a description of what appears to be just a Puerto Rican version of this. There have been other descriptions of it from elsewhere. I just wanted to point that out.
No, you're absolutely right. And I didn't mean to suggest that the Puerto Rican version of Chupacabra hadn't been seen in Latin America, because it was seen and reported in Mexico and Chile and Argentina and elsewhere. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I don't.
But you're correct. It did kind of fade out in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. And you know, and as you point out, it sort of reappeared in various other places. And you know, when you go back and look at the original descriptions of the chupacabra, the one that Tolentino gave out is the most popular and best known depiction. But there, as you point out, there are a wide variety. Some people said it had a tail. Some people said it doesn't have a tail. Some people reported wings. Some people said it didn't have wings. So there was actually quite a bit of variation within that original prototype.
Yeah, and it's also important, I think, to point out that this is almost exclusively a Latin American a country sort of phenomenon. Although I think about 2 or 3 years ago, there were some reports that may have filtered out of Russia. But I think, by and large, these reports are pretty much exclusively from Spanish American speaking or Spanish speaking countries. And then we get into the canine types, which is a whole different subject, I think. But continue again, sorry.
Right. No, you're quite right. The chupacabra is primarily limited to Spanish speaking areas, with the exception of Brazil, where they speak Portuguese. And there were some reports of the chupacabra, or at least presumably similar related creature called Obicho in Brazil as well. So, yeah.
Okay, the book is called Tracking the Chupacabra, and I guess the question I'm going to ask you before we go further, all these reports, specifically in a special part of the world for the most part, do you think that they were seeing conventional animals of some kind, or do you see any evidence at all for weirdness here?
You're referring to the original type of chupacabra?
And then the sequels.
Well, the thing is with eyewitness accounts is that you can't just lump them all together and say there's one blanket explanation for them because there isn't. There's a wide variety of things that people may have seen. Some people may have seen originally in Puerto Rico in the 90s, people may have seen resident monkeys, was one explanation. Dogs, strange things at night. So I don't think that there's one blanket explanation for all of them. I think that some of the reports were clearly fictional. I came across lots and lots of accounts that just simply had no credibility to them whatsoever. Other accounts were quite believable. Someone saw something out of the corner of their eye, and who knows what that was.
I want to ask you some more details about that in a moment, such as how do we know that maybe they just made things up? We'll have to look into that further. The book is Tracking the Chupacabra, the Vampire Beast in Fact, Fiction, and Folklore from Benjamin Radford. Here's how you contact us if you have a comment or a question about the PowerCast. Write to us, news@thepowercast.com. Once again, that's news@thepowercast.com. We guarantee we will read each and every message you send. We will respond to most of them, Chris or I, or one of our moderators on our forums. Speaking of our forums, forum.powercast.com. Forum.powercast.com. This is the place they're talking about all over the planet online. The famous PowerCast community forums. You can participate. You can become a member. Go to forum.powercast.com. Forum.powercast.com. Sign up. In a few moments, you can get in on all the action. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the PowerCast.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats, I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Freedom, the blistering anti-globalist anthem from the rock band Ravelin.
Back in thrones have their tombs. Slakes filled with sea with the moon.
Just one of 11 great songs from their album Under the Sun. Available on iTunes and at Ravelin.com. R-A-V-E-L-Y-N. Ravelin.com.
Spring and a new growing season are here. Plan a healthy garden easy and fast with Organicaseed.com. Easy because Organicaseed.com offers one of the largest online selections of organic, heirloom, non-hybrid, and untreated seeds, as well as tobacco and cotton seeds at low prices. Go to Organicaseed.com, spelled O-R-G-A-N-I-C-A-Seed.com. Organicaseed.com. Remember, Organicaseed is healthy seed.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids, the original since 1976.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boosts resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
We have Ben Radford. The book is Tracking the Chupacabra. We're going to look at these weird creatures and see whether there is really something true to them, just misidentification, someone's just making it all up, trying to get a little publicity, maybe drinking too much of the sauce. What's the reality? Co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. Okay, so I guess you were raising the different categories of sightings, and I gather some people maybe are just making it all up. How do you know that?
I don't assume that people are making it up at all. In fact, my assumption in this investigation, as in all my investigations, is that most people are sincere, genuine eyewitnesses. Most people really believe they saw something. So I found very, very few cases where people were actually making it up. I found many more cases where people simply were reporting things that they saw something out of the corner of their eye, and their eyes sort of, and their, you know, their minds sort of filled in the details.
Well, we also have hundreds and hundreds of animal carcasses as well, which I'm sure we're going to talk about at some point. But you do have physical evidence of some sort of predatory presence. So we always have to keep that in mind. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, and of course, predation has plagued mankind for millennia. So there's no doubt that there are animals that attack other animals.
Yep.
Okay, so someone sees something in the corner of their eye, and they confabulate something that's maybe weird. So what might they have seen other than something weird or paranormal or whatever?
Oh, again, it depends on the specific case. There was a taxi driver that reported that he saw some bipedal winged creature running along his taxi at night. I have no idea what that was. It could have been a hoax. It could have been – I have no idea. So, again, you have to go by the specific case. It's kind of hard for me to give you a blanket explanation because –
Okay, let's look at that one case. I don't know. It could have been something else. I don't know what it might have been. It's mistaken. He saw something that was fairly normal at night. Of course, the vision isn't very good. You don't really get a clear indication of what you're seeing. So he, saw something and made up the rest of the story. What?
I have no idea. I mean, what you do find a lot of times is that the eyewitnesses themselves are actually much more reserved in their accounts than what you see in the news media. I encountered many cases where it seemed that the reporters who are writing up the stories either for El Vocero, which is a tabloid in Puerto Rico or elsewhere, they sort of spiced up the story. I'm not going to say they fabricated it, but certainly they added some details and sort of made it sound more dramatic than the eyewitnesses themselves made it out to be.
Those dang reporters.
Yeah, you gotta watch out for those dang reporters. Okay, so in this particular situation here, it was the press that made a big deal of it.
In the case of the Chupacabra, there were actually two different factors. One of them was, again, the co-opting by UFO believers in Puerto Rico of Tolentino's original description, because they believed that the Chupacabra was probably an extraterrestrial, or at least connected with extraterrestrials. The second thing was...
So the UFO people who believe in UFOs or investigate UFOs, you're suggesting here that they will make these cases seem to be something related related to the UFO belief, not something.
No, Gene,
separate.
Really, you don't think that that could ever happen, do you?
Oh, sure. But you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying.
God, that's a real major problem in this field, as all three of us know.
Yeah. I mean, there are many, many different ideas about what the chupacabra is. Some people believe it's an alien pet. Some people believe it's the result of a top-secret U.S. government genetic experiment. Some people think that it's the cause of the AIDS virus. Some people believe that it's a sign of Armageddon and the end times.
An opinion's a dime a dozen,
mm-hmm.
and we can believe anything we want. But right now we're assuming then that in some cases the media is exaggerating something that might be very simple misidentification of some kind of conventional creature, simple explanation, but somebody, a news reporter or his or her editors, they embellish the event so it becomes something more than it was. Is that the case?
That's often what you find when you go back and research the original accounts, the original tabloid accounts in Puerto Rico in 1996, 1997. Many of the stories, not all of them, but many of them are clearly embellished and exaggerated. There was one particular example I talk about in the book where a reporter talked about how a young girl had seen the chupacabra, had been kidnapped by it. The chupacabra then tattooed or had some sort of skin marks on the girl. It then escaped, and then the girl shortly became a genius, a child prodigy. It's not clear whether it was the tattoo or the chupacabra, but this was reported as a straight chupacabra news story, and it's
a Weekly World News kind of thing.
Essentially, it is.
Okay.
But you have to. But this is that was not untypical of a lot of the news coverage of the original Puerto Rican chupacabra. I mean, so that's actually not that wasn't atypical of what people were hearing about.
Okay, so separating the story, the news story, where you have the tabloid writers taking anything out there and making up something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we know that President Carter met with Martians or something, whatever it was, back in the 70s. Okay, so we go back to the original event. How do you do that? Do you go back to the original witnesses, or do you assume because the tabloid has all this elaborate invention behind it that there can't possibly be anything that has a reality to it?
Well, in this case, I did a couple different things. One of them was I researched as much as I could on the original accounts that were taken at the time in Puerto Rico. So for that, I relied heavily on Scott Corrales' book, Chupacabras and Other Mysteries, in which he reports quite a few accounts from the time. The other thing I did was go to Puerto Rico, and I interviewed eyewitnesses there, as well as the original eyewitness, Madeline Tolentino, who's basically citing spurred the entire chupacabra form.
Typhoid Mary.
All right, pretty much. And then the third thing I did was I went to library archives in Puerto Rico and San Juan and elsewhere, and I researched original chupacabra reports because I speak decent Spanish. I photocopied them and I could read them, and so I got information from there. And that sort of gives you a more original source, a more primary source than just sort of third hand stories.
Do you think part of the problem is that people are taking too many of the third-party stories, the third-hand, the extravagant headlines in these tabloids, and running with it and just taking any event anywhere as being part of this chupacabra mystery?
I think that's exactly what's going on.
And I agree with you, Ben, on that, too.
Yeah, and Chris agrees with me on that, so we're good. That's
folks, you know, Chris agrees with you. We know it's not a mystery. Let's go on.
There you go. Move on.
Well, I'm with a caveat. I agree that part of what we're seeing here, and I think that it should be stressed that your point at the top of the show about this all of a sudden appearing out of nowhere in 1995 is, I think, really telling. And I think the spread of this whole meme in the culture is a perfect example of how urban legends and popular sort of modern myths get started, propagated, and spread. This is a good example. I'm not saying that there's not the possibility of something being behind this mystery, some sort of real predatory presence that is being talked about, but I don't think it really bears too much of a resemblance of what the pop culture version of it is.
No, I would agree with you, and you make a very good point, which is that it's not A or B. It's not one or the other. It's not as if either there is a real chupacabra or this is a media hyped monster. It could be both. Regardless of whether you believe in chupacabra or not, it's an undeniable fact that the media and the pop culture is a huge part of the lore surrounding it. So I would argue that, in fact, that the entire phenomenon, or much of the phenomenon, has been propelled without a true chupacabra at its core.
I said we might differ there a little bit on that. I do have a sense that there is something high strange at the core of this. I think that the actual events that could be attributed to this particular entity or whatever you want to call it are a small percentage of the overall appearance of the whole mystery. But again, this is where we differ. I assume that there are law enforcement officials and veterinarians and others who are able to determine cause of death and whether an animal has been truly exanguated. This is an element that you bring up, I think, very effectively in your book. This is one of the mainstays of this phenomenon, that these animals are drained of blood and fluids. And having undergone this same scenario in the cattle mutilation phenomenon, I find that it's highly it's just not true. These animals, I don't think, are drained. I know that the cattle are very rarely drained of fluids in all the cases that I've checked. So
we'll go into the CSI elements in a moment. We'll have all the CSI coverage here. This is the Paracast CSI edition. We're talking to Ben Radford. The book is Tracking the Chupacabra. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.